Hi, I'm Carmen LaBerge. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. It is Tuesday. I know it feels like a Monday, but it is really Tuesday, January the 22nd, 2019. And we had quite a weekend. I don't know what all you did over your holiday weekend, but I hope that you are safe. And I hope that you're doing well. Prayers appreciated for my little family. My mom had knee replacement surgery yesterday. And I'm not there, and she's 80, and I feel guilty. So there you go. That's just prayers for all of that, and that God would make her recovery as painless as possible and give her the energy and the strength that she needs to, you know, endure that rehab on that knee. She's planning on having the other one done as well, so it'd be great if this one went well. So there you go. Shout out to my precious sister, Tiana, who is shouldering the burden of that responsibility. So thanks to all of you for prayers for my family in the midst of all of that. So let me just say that if you've got prayer requests, we do appreciate being included in the circle of knowing so that we can be lifting you up by name and the concerns of you and your family here at Faith Radio. So if you go to myfaithradio.com, there is a place there where you can let us know what your prayer requests are. You can always text them to me at 877-933-2484. You could email me your prayer request, Carmen at myfaithradio.com. You know, we won't read them on the air unless you, I don't know, make some special request of that. But normally we just, you know, let you know that we're praying for you, and we'll certainly respond personally and let you know we're praying for you as well. This is a family, and you invite me every day into your life in ways that I find pretty extraordinary. I count it a tremendous privilege that you include me in your day. And so I want to know who you are. I want to know that you're listening, and I want to know how we can be praying for you here at the Faith Radio family. So again, let us hear from you. Let us know that you're out there, that you're listening, and how we can be lifting you up in prayer today as an encouragement to your walk of faith. My real goal is to help us reconnect the eternal with the everyday and live into the conversations of the day in ways that honor Jesus. So let me jump into I you know, it's kind of hard to know, I'll just admit, which headlines people are reading and which storylines are actually captivating the attention of our listeners on a day-to-day basis. So my first, my opening volley today is related to a whole weekend full of marching. And so don't be immediately put off. I'm not going to side with anybody who marched this weekend other than the March for Life, which won't surprise you. Other than that, I'm not aligning with anybody. I'm just saying, man, did we have a weekend of marching or what? Lots of marches, people marching. So in our nation's capital, over the past 4 days, there have been a widely disparate crowd, people holding vastly different worldviews, marching around the nation's capital. And after the dust settled, I think that one of the takeaways will certainly be a lesson in civics, right? Like, we certainly got a lesson in the fact that the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America guarantees our right to peaceably assemble and, if necessary, petition the government for a redress of our grievances. Like, that's a part of Amendment number one, the First Amendment to the Constitution. And lots of Americans exercised that right this weekend. And some of them did so interacting with one another in ways that maybe didn't live out the golden rule. So I think I want to encourage us as Christians to, first of all, embrace the freedom not only of assembly, like, you know, going to church, that's important, but also, you know, the freedom to get out there and peaceably assemble with others when we want to raise our collective voice. But as we do that, we have to recognize that other people operating out of other worldviews may collectively be raising their voices, exercising their first freedoms in ways that we don't agree with. And so I think that we have to remember as Christians that as we engage, we need to do so as living demonstrations of the principles of the kingdom of heaven. And certainly one of those principles is to do unto others as we would have them do unto us, to seek first kingdom ideas, kingdom principles, to seek first the righteousness of God. And, you know, when Jesus says all these things will be added unto you, you know, what he's talking about there is not just material blessings. He's talking about things like liberty and justice and good things that happen in community when righteousness is what we are pursuing first and foremost. So in case you have been completely out of the news loop over the weekend, let me tell you a few things that happened. The march took place again. Some 50,000 young, mostly young people. I mean, I think that that's a significant part of the storyline related to the March for Life. It has been trending younger and younger and younger. And you now know, if you didn't know before, that busloads of Catholic students from across the country are a part of the March for Life every year. Catholic high schools, including one from Kentucky that has now made the headline news, the Covington Catholic School. They take busloads of their students to the March for Life every single year. You may know that the Vice President of the United States personally appeared, that the President of the United States offered his comments. You may also know that the media chose to give its full attention to a video of a junior in high school from Kentucky who was standing motionless as other people, we now know, four individuals affiliated with something called the Black Hebrew Israelites, launched just horrible language in their direction. And that this young man was then accused of taunting an elder who is a Native American who was there participating in another march, the March for Indigenous People. And then there's these storylines where, you know, it wasn't clear for a while whether or not that Native American older gentleman was seeking to restore some peace and harmony, or if, in fact, he was getting in there to mix it up himself. So it seems as if the boy's story actually does hold up, as now hours of video have been strung together by news organizations, and a fuller picture has emerged. And that picture does not reinforce the negative narrative about pro-life white Catholic kids. And therefore, you know, now folks are having to take down the things that they posted on Twitter, and some news organizations are having to draw down even their reporting on the incident because it was, in fact, not based on fact. What do we learn here? Well, first of all, I think that my recommendation for, like, the standard of jumping to conclusions about something that happened in a place that you're not, you know, immediately present. My first rule is don't jump to conclusions too quickly. Wait for all the facts to emerge. Give it at least a day. Give it at least a day. And a viral video, you have to remember, is literally one person's view of one portion of an event. It is not the event in full context, and it's not everyone's perspective on that same event. So what does this give us an opportunity to talk about? Well, I think as Christians, it gives us an opportunity to talk about the varieties of ways in which the gospel writers share accounts of Jesus's life. Like, is there a reason that because something is told from Matthew's perspective, it doesn't necessarily line up dot for dot in terms of some sort of something that would satisfy a fact checker? Doesn't it necessarily line up with, let's say, John's account of the same event? And I would say, look, different people are telling the same story from their perspective. Now, when we talk about the events that unfolded in Washington, D.C. this past weekend, the confluence of events is pretty extraordinary. There are people there who are obviously seeking to promote a particular agenda or raise a particular concern or assemble and make people aware of a personal issue, a specific issue. It may not be personal, normally political. And that takes us to the third annual Women's March, which was held amidst great controversy stemming from anti-Semitic views of some of its organizers. And then all of the MLK Day marches that took place yesterday in honor and recognition and celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, each of these marches is part of a bigger story. And that story is, frankly, one that is just fraught with sin. We wouldn't need a March for Life if abortion weren't the leading cause of death in America year over year over year since the mid-70s. We wouldn't need a March for Life if we didn't live in the midst of a culture of death. But we do need a March for Life, and I would say the reason that we need a March for Life is actually increasing, not decreasing. We wouldn't need a women's march if women were treated with equal dignity. We wouldn't need an indigenous people's march if indigenous people were treated with the full dignity of their humanity. And on and on and on. And we wouldn't need an MLK march if, in fact, systemic racism were something that were genuinely in the past. Personal racist ideologies and ideas. Clearly, these things are not in the past for America. We wouldn't be in the midst of hashtag Me Too. We wouldn't be in the midst of major conversations in our culture related to racial differences and challenges that people who are black and brown face in the culture that people who are white simply don't face. So Christians actually have something to say about each and every one of these concerns. We know God. We know God's heart for humanity. We know redemption. We know God's plan for redemption of all things. So you and I as Christians, we got to lean into these hard conversations because these are the conversations of our day, this day. We have to speak the truth in the context of these cultural conversations because we actually know what leads to real liberty from sin, real liberty from death, real justice, manifesting principles of the kingdom of heaven right here and right now, not just something that we pray for, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, but something that we actually manifest and demonstrate in our own lives every day. Friends, the gospel is not old news. It's just news that lots of people have forgotten and other people have forgotten how to tell. So you and I, we can change that today. And we have the freedom in this country to peaceably assemble to do that. All right, hey, let me take a quick break, and when we come back, I'm gonna talk about why I think that pro-life advocacy still matters and actually why the need for it is increasing. I'm Carmen LaBerge. You're listening to Connecting Faith.
Wherever I go.
Hey, friends, you are listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge, and I thought we'd take a few minutes to talk about not just the March for Life, but the scope of what it means to be pro-life and why I think pro-life advocacy doesn't just still matter, but actually maybe matters more today because of the scope of issues that are pro-life related or life related. So I have told you before, I will say it again, I am pro-life from conception to natural death. And so that means that I have concerns not just for the preborn. I have concern for those who are born. I have concern for those who are born into difficulty, those who are born into very difficult situations, those who are born with disabilities, those who acquire disabilities over the course of life. I'm pro-life for all life, not just some life. And I'm pro-life until God determines that that life should end. And so I will call that natural death. And so when we have pro-life conversations today, one of the things that you would know if you followed any of the March for Life stuff this year is that the March for Life theme was related to pro-life being pro-science. And that's pretty provocative, by the way, and certainly controversial. And something that, you know, can be argued multiple ways. And so the apologists in the room, the people who like apologetics, you know, they liked that. That was fun. That was zesty. Here's the challenge for maybe the more average among us. We're not exactly sure what, according to science, is the beginning of life. We know, according to God, what the beginning of life is. And we know that God actually has human beings conceived in his heart of hearts before the foundations of the earth. Like, you know, you were written on his hand way before you were conceived in the womb of your mama. And so God knows us through and through forever and ever. When that this life of ours that we experience as terrestrial, you know, when that actually starts, you know, I'm going with conception because I can point to that as a point in time when that which was conceived in the heart of God before time actually is conceived in a physical reality manifest in this time. And the same with natural death. I can know the difference between when a person is alive physically and when they are physically not alive. Beyond that, before that and after that, you know, those are mysteries still belong to God. Certainly, God has revealed much in the scriptures of the Old and New Testaments about what our life beyond this life will be like. And most importantly, it will be with him forever. And, you know, that's good enough. But when you start bringing the pro-science conversation to the table here, I think that what pro-life advocates, particularly those when we're talking about abortion, when we're talking about pro-life advocacy, what they're talking about is, hey, science now helps us see into the womb. We can actually see that person in there. Those 4D sonograms, if you haven't seen the actual photographs they take of those little people in the womb, you got to check that out. And so you can tell it's a person. Like, there's no denying that's a person in there. And so when we're talking about pro-life being pro-science, and we're talking in that direction, I understand it. When we talk about pro-life advocacy here in the United States, we're not just talking about Roe v. Wade and the legality or the so-called right to have an abortion at any stage of pregnancy for any reason whatsoever. That's not, in my view, a holistic pro-life view. I'm more a human dignity advocate. And so I think we've got to be talking about the comprehensive dignity of every human being, regardless of how much value added there is to them being around. And so this gets us directly into conversations that are not just about what it means to be pro-life for the preborn, but pro-life for those who are here already.
Apparently we lost Carmen's feed there. Apologies for that. We'll try to get Carmen back on the line in just a moment. Thank you for your patience as we establish reconnection with Carmen here on our Comrex line. And you can always email Carmen or text the station if you want to do that. 877-933-2484 is a number to call or text. We will get those. If you want to be a part of the show, make a comment. 877-933-2484. And you can always stay up to date on the latest going on here at Connecting Faith by going to myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page. It's under the program tab. There you'll find the main page to click on. And there you can just keep up to date and listen to past episodes as well. You can also share any Connecting Faith show that you hear at the station here. Just go to myfaithradio.com, again, to the Connecting Faith show page. Look under the program tab for that. And any of the past shows you can listen to or share with someone real easily at myfaithradio.com. I think we're just about establishing contact here. Rachel is trying to contact Carmen. Get her back on the line. There she is.
Well,
hi, Carmen.
Hello. Sorry, guys. I'm back. All right. Let me jump right back into where I was. Again, friends, you're listening to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and I am making my appeal for why I think pro-life advocacy still matters today. Let me just jump into four quick headlines here. First of all, if you don't know yet, Planned Parenthood lost a major case in the Fifth Circuit in Texas in regard to the funding that they received through Medicaid. The state of Texas sought to strip Planned Parenthood of its Medicaid funding a number of years ago based on videos of Planned Parenthood affiliates harvesting and selling baby body parts. So you will check that out, that there is a victory for life in the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling against Planned Parenthood in a Texas case. However, here's the bad news. Planned Parenthood, which just ended its, well, it it doesn't run on an annual year like, you know, January to January. So they just released their Planned Parenthood 2017-2018 annual report covering services that they rendered between October of 2016 and September of 2017. Now, hold your hat here, because they report total net assets of $2.2 billion and net income in that one year of $244.8 million. That is more than twice the $98.5 million in income it reported the prior year. They have said that they performed 332,757 abortions in that 1 year. That's an increase over the fiscal year prior to that as well. There's no question that abortion continues to account for an overwhelming, something like 96% of Planned Parenthood's quote-unquote pregnancy-related services. Nothing else they do even comes close to what they're doing in relationship to abortion. And at least their new president is honest that abortion is, in fact, the organization's, quote, core mission. And so we need continued pro-life advocacy for that reason. Let me highlight one more article for you in terms of why we need pro-life advocacy. I'm reading a headline from The Guardian. That's a European paper, and it's called Death on Demand: Has Euthanasia Gone Too Far? This is an article posted on January the 18th. It'd be interesting if it was February the 18th. We're not there yet. January the 18th, and it's related to the use of euthanasia in the Netherlands. And again, this is a pretty stunning statistical revelation, and it's by the government itself. We have talked about the global movement toward what is euphemistically called death with dignity, or physician-assisted dying, or aid in dying. But what we're talking about is unquestionably physician-assisted suicide and active euthanasia when we're talking about the Netherlands. More than 13,000 Dutch people requested to be euthanized, actively euthanized, in 2017. 6,600 of those requests were actually carried out. But here's the more alarming number. 32,000 people died as a result of something called terminal sedation. I got to admit to you, I didn't know this was going on. According to the article in The Guardian, 32,000 people were sedated into comas and then died of dehydration while they were unconscious. So technically, this allows the Dutch to claim that those people died as the natural result of their illness. But if inducing a coma and then withholding fluids isn't murder, I don't know what is. It might be dressed up in medical scrubs, and it might be dressed up in new euphemistic language. But friends, that's where we're headed when we start talking about the legalization and the legal embrace of physician-assisted suicide. It moves not only to active euthanasia, it also moves into areas that, that is a sad state of affairs. 32,000, a full quarter of the people who died in the Netherlands died by death that was induced in one way or another by a physician. All right, friends, next up, David Coleman. He is CEO of the College Board. He's going to be here to talk with us about how you might fund your kids' college education through something called the Opportunity Scholarship Program. It's now open for kids who will be in the graduating class of 2020, and it's available to kids going to Christian colleges. So, next up here on Connecting Faith, David Coleman. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge, and we'll be right back. Hey friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBurge. Joining me now is David Coleman. He is the CEO of the College Board. The College Board is a mission-driven, not-for-profit organization. You and I know it because they made us take the SATs. But they also do the AP program, and the College Board is committed to clearing a path for all students to own their future. And he's joining me today to talk about a way to do that. It's called the Opportunity Scholarship Program. David, welcome back to Connecting Faith.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
So it's fun for those of us that are at the stage of life where we have a student who I've got one that's in the graduating class of 2021. So at least the discussion of college is in front of us. But let's talk about planning for college, because there are literally a million options. So how does a student figure out what kind of college is the best option for them? And when should parents and students begin the college planning process?
Well, if you don't mind, Carmen, the first thing I'll say about beginning the college planning process is maybe not to start too early. I think we've got to stop the madness a bit where families and kids are worrying about college kind of since they're born. My own twins are 4 years old, and some people already ask me questions about them. And if you think about what it really is to plan for college, if your child grows up, if the student grows up learning to build deep relationships with great teachers and seek them out, learning to love learning, finding a devotion outside of class, these life skills, these long-term skills are going to be what's going to help them succeed at any college they go to. In terms of college planning, we've heard from parents and kids throughout this country that it's much too complicated. So we launched a new College Board Opportunity Scholarship, and the whole idea is it outlines six simple steps that all families can take to go from all these options to a clear list for where their child can go.
Oh, I love that. Well, so let's just talk about the College Board Opportunity Scholarship. I know it kicked off this month for the graduating class of 2020. That would be current juniors in high school. Tell us a little bit about the scholarship.
The new College Board Opportunity Scholarships lay out six simple steps that all students can take to get to go to college. So completing each step will earn a chance for a scholarship. Completing all six will earn a chance to win $40,000 towards their college education. The six steps help students plan by making a good starter list of schools, help them prepare so they can take their best shot, and help them pay for college. So they include things like practicing and doing better on the SAT. They include things like making and revising a good college list. And I want to be clear that those scholarships are applicable wherever they want to go to college, including, of course, Christian colleges and the wide diversity of American colleges. And they're also for every single student. Many scholarships are just for the kids in the front of the class. They're for the top athletes, the top students. But the College Board Opportunity Scholarships call out to every student in every high school and say, if you make a starter list, if you improve, if you grow, you should go forward. So we're less interested in where you start, but where you go.
So I'm just curious. I mean, you talk a little bit about, you know, you're inviting everybody. But I think that there are those of us who think, okay, but my kid's probably not eligible, right? I mean, I work full time. My husband works full time. Like, is our kid, our kid probably wants to go to a college that's operating out of a distinctively Christian worldview. Like, is my kid eligible?
Your kid is eligible. All students are eligible without restraint. Go to collegeboard.org/opportunity. And if you make a starter list of colleges, including Christian colleges, you will be eligible for a chance at a $500 scholarship. So check me. In other words, have faith in some things, but this you can check. Just go to the website and make a starter list with your son or daughter, and you will be eligible for a scholarship from immediately. Once you've taken that first step, you can keep going. So what's so exciting about this scholarship is we don't ask you what's your past performance or do you have high scores in the SAT, but we will ask you, will you practice and improve for free? Because what we're trying to say to all kids is they need to own their future. And so if we invite families to participate with them in owning their future, they are eligible.
Okay, so David, here's one of the things I like about this. And let me remind our listeners, I'm talking with David Coleman, and you can check out the Opportunity Scholarship Program at collegeboard.org/opportunity. You can also find them on Twitter at College Board. David, I like that it's almost like you're going to come alongside a student and walk with them on their journey. Because I'll just admit to you that for a lot of parents, this is totally unknown territory. We either just went to whatever the school was that was like closest to where we lived or where one of our parents went or, I don't know, where our friend was going. And it's so different today. And the level of competition is kind of mind-blowing. And what it costs is kind of mind-blowing to most of us as parents. So I like that you're coming alongside students and walking with them on this journey.
And I do want to say, Carmen, let's remember that people talk about all this competition and all this insanity, but going to college is still about finding great teachers, falling in love with something outside of class and something within class, period. Most kids who go to college don't take nearly enough advantage of it. So I want to just remind your listeners that the training they're doing with their children every day to make them love learning, to find great teachers, to discover something they love is the best preparation of all to college. in terms of navigating the choice, what the College Board Opportunity Scholarships do is make it very simple. The first step is to make a first list of six colleges, and that can include any set of colleges that you'd like. Then later in the scholarship, if you keep going, it asks you to revise that list. You take a look at your academic background, your SAT scores, other factors, so you can make a more informed choice. You might have a specialty. You might be interested in a college with a certain worldview, like a Christian college. And I'll just tell you one thing. My first editorial as president of the College Board was a defense of the great Christian colleges in this country. So there is no way under my leadership that this scholarship would not be fully open to Christian families, whether their students are studying at home today, whether their students are studying in a Christian or independent school today, and whether they aim to go to a religious college. It is open to everyone, including homeschooled students.
So, David, let's just tell people what the six steps are. So we're going to build a college list. That's step number one. And then we're going to practice for the SAT.
That's exactly right. And
I just love that part of this is, like, you know, you talk about the Khan Academy where, you know, people can do things for free. It's not like this is a way for you guys to make a bunch of money. And so I kind of appreciate that, right? This seems like genuinely, like a genuine desire to help kids and their parents move through this process that seems kind of scary to a lot of us.
And keep it to just six steps. So you did the first two, build a college list, practice for the SAT, improve your score through practice, strengthen your college list, go back to that first list you made and make it better based on what you now know about yourself. Complete the FAFSA if you're eligible for it, the federal aid program that gives aid to poor families. And finally, step six is apply to the colleges you want to attend. And any student can do those things when you think about it. They're all free. And they all allow you to just practice and improve. And remember, for low-income students, they can take two SATs for free as well. So we've really tried to make this as open as possible. And I really, Carmen, I really want to be very clear on this. Sometimes the Christian community thinks that many of these things are built for others and may not embrace their community, no matter what someone like me says. But I want to just tell everyone here that you can talk to the Christian college presidents who I've talked to, and I meet with them regularly. This scholarship is designed for any home, including religious homes, who want to take this step towards their child's future.
Again, friends, if you go to collegeboard.org, actually, if you just type in cb.org, it's going to pop you over to the College Board website, and you're going to do /opportunity to find out more information about what David Colbin and I are discussing today, which is the Opportunity Scholarship Program. David, you guys have committed a lot of money to this. Like, this is not chump change. Talk with us about, you know, how many kids are going to be served through this scholarship program.
We've committed $25 million over the next 5 years. And as of today, 41,000 students who have joined have already created their first college list. So I want to tell every family, get online and make your college list. 69,000 students have signed up, and 41,000 of them have taken the first step to create a first college list. 9,000 of them have practiced at least 6 hours on Khan Academy. And so what you're seeing is a movement of kids across this country who are taking these steps and earning scholarships.
And I appreciate that, you know, at least half of the scholarships are going to be awarded to students whose families earn less than $60,000 a year. I think that's a significant commitment on your part to, you know, sort of, I don't know if it's even the playing field, but it's at least even the starting blocks, even,
yes.
Like, right, helping
that's
people
exactly
get
right.
get to the same place. And again, let's just remind folks that you guys also offer two opportunities for kids who come from low-income families to actually take the SAT for free. So talk about some other resources that would be available at collegeboard.org if people were to go there.
I just want to remind every family that if you happen to be above that $60,000 threshold, remember, these scholarships are meant for you too. While half are reserved for those families that are lower income, the other half is available to absolutely anyone. And at collegeboard.org, you'll find free resources for making your college choice. We have a website called Big Future where you can examine your college choices. We have the free resources for Khan Academy, and we have a set of resources to help you understand financing for college. We know scholarships can play part of the role, but one thing a lot of families don't understand is the real price of college is often different from the sticker price for college. They'll hear a price for a college, but we have tools that make sure you find out with your own income, your own background, what the price will be for you.
So I have a friend who her son is his freshman year. And there's a little bit of a surprise, right? Now, I don't know, like, how you get to the place where you're like, oh, I want my kid to come home at Thanksgiving, and I want my kid to come home at Christmas, and I want to see my kid maybe one time in the spring. Huh. That travel back and forth to California is not in my, like, I didn't put that in to my, what's it going to cost me this year? And so part of the college choice in terms of, like, when we're having these financial conversations is just simply the travel back and forth to the place they're going to be.
Carmen, I so agree with you. As you're thinking about financing college, remember, of course, the time for your own family to be back together through travel, the books and other materials your son or daughter might need as they navigate, and kind of just the added flexibility to get the extra pair of clothes and something they might have forgotten. And one reason we've developed these scholarships is for some students, the money that they save through the College Board Opportunity Scholarships can make up for that, those kinds of costs that you're talking about. And I want to make sure that every young person who goes to college can focus on their studies and not be overly distracted by these other costs that you're talking about.
David, we so appreciate what you guys are doing at the College Board. And I don't know, maybe an encouraging word unrelated to this, but maybe an encouraging word to those seniors in high school this year. Talk to them for a moment about how excited you are that they are, you know, in this last semester of their high school experience, how excited you are about what lies ahead for them as college students.
You know, a lot of people are talking about how anger is dividing our country and they're worried about our nation's future. And the only antidote you need to that is to go meet the next generation of young students full of hope and aspirations about their future. I luckily, through the AP program, through our advanced placement program, meet millions of seniors across the country, and they're interested in hard work and building their future. And if you give them a path to the future, they will not walk, they will run. And that's why we develop these scholarships. And I've got to tell you, I have a secret hope that the Christian community that is so excellent at devoted daily practice will show its power by disproportionately making these scholarships part of their kids' learning and part of their kids' growth, and win them and earn them and show the country its strength. So I could not be more enthusiastic about the high school students I meet. I find them full of energy and full of excitement about the country.
Well, and we appreciate what you're doing. All right, you guys, that's David Coleman from the College Board. If you go to CB or collegeboard.org/opportunity, you can check out what we're talking about today, which is the College Board Opportunity Scholarship Program. David, thanks for joining us again on Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much. Great to be with you.
All right, friends, I got to take one more quick break. When we come back, we'll be making the connecting point. This is Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Hey, friends, welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Let's spend a little time here making the connecting point. So there's a lot of bad news out there. And I would like today's connecting point to be an encouragement to you of just how much good news there is out there. And that we as Christians, we are people of the good news, right? We're gospel people. But sometimes we aren't the first to point out the good news in the culture. We're not always the first to celebrate the positive. Sometimes we get very adept at picking at nits, as my sister would say, or picking out the pepper. And so let's be people who are salt and look for those salty stories and opportunities, not just always be looking for the pepper. And you know, we don't want to be Debbie Downers, and that's no downer on anybody named Debbie, by the way. So my friend Mindy Belts over at World Magazine, she's a really good journalist, and she does what I would describe as really fine journalism. She finds good stories, and she promotes good news. Now, that doesn't mean that everything that she always talks about is happy, because stories that are redemptive, stories that that demonstrate God's power on display in the world today, even through the hands and hearts of his people. They are ordinarily stories that start with something that looks quite terrible and quite awful. I mean, if it needs redeeming, then obviously we're talking about it being broken. If it needs redeeming, we're talking about something that is not as it should be. So Mindy starts this particular piece that is posted at worldmagazine.org, and it's called Good News Wins. She talked about, you know, all of the bad news that you might have heard about in the past week. And then she says this: that same week, thousands of miles away, health workers successfully deployed drones to deliver vaccines in Vanuatu, which is a far-flung country of 80 islands in the South Pacific. So you might have all these bad news stories about drones, she says, right? You heard these unidentified drones at Gatwick and later at Heathrow, which shut those airports down. Drones have potential to wreak havoc. And then she says, you know, but they also have potential to bring good. And so she wants to look for those good news stories that rarely make the headlines. 20% of Vanuatu's children had never received vaccines. And so these vaccines that were being delivered by these drones are literally life-saving. So she pulls this report from Popular Mechanics. And so this is the other thing. I want you to read widely. I want you to look for good news stories in places that would be surprising to people. So, yes, we can go to faithwire.com and we can check out all the good news stories that they're posting. They have actually gone and culled the news for us to aggregate in one place at Faithwire good news stories that we can turn to and that we can be uplifted by and that we can use in our conversations in the world to bear witness to the redemptive reality of God. Absolutely. And I encourage you to do that. But I would also encourage you, as you are reading Popular Mechanics or Popular Science or the U.S. News and World Report or USA Today, whatever you're reading, literally, whatever you're reading, there's a good news story in there. There's a story of redemption. I'm pretty sure that they just announced, you know, who's up for Oscars, like who the nominees are for the Oscars. Black Panther is nominated for Best Picture. Well, I know. So then my mind is like, turning over and over, like, what do I know about that movie? It certainly has this really kind of cool redemptive storyline. I think it calls people to their better selves at the very end and sort of illuminates the responsibility that people of means, regardless of their skin color, have for communities of color and acting as a redemptive force in those places. But it also was, as I recall, the sort of breakout movie for a very open Christian artist. And so, you know, there are opportunities there to use something that the news gives us on a given day and say, you know, I think there's a good news storyline in all of that. So let's go back to Mindy's piece here in World Magazine. So she talks about the drone making it possible for the very first immunizations for babies as young as 1 month old. And these women who are, you know, having these babies in Vanuatu would have to otherwise walk 25 miles to reach a clinic where they would stand in line and hope to get in and hope that the vaccine that their child needed was available. And so in a world, this is Mindy's line here, the world that has fallen is also in the midst of redemption everywhere. Yet cynicism, even despair, easily can rule the day or the homepage. And she's basically saying, don't do that. Don't let that be what dominates your social media feed. Don't let that be what dominates your conversations. We are people of Pentecost. She goes on to say, the book of Acts often reads like breaking news, giving us the sensational inside scoop on what happened to the early church following Jesus' ascension. In detail, it tells us who was present at Pentecost, what was said on and off the record, what led to Stephen's stoning, how bystanders became instigators, flinging their coats at the feet of a young man named Saul. Now, friend, you and I both know that's a story that's got some legs, because Saul becomes who we know in history as the Apostle Paul, the writer of the majority of the New Testament. So when we talk about the good news and we talk about the way that we cover And you know, each one of us, by the way, because we have social media platforms and because we have conversations with other people, we are sort of journalists. We're sort of eye reporters. I don't know how else you want to think about that. But you and I have a responsibility to pass along the news that we've received. So, you know, Paul passes along as of first importance that which he also received. And what did he pass? Passes along the gospel, the core content of the message that God has sent a redeemer, and his name is Jesus. And he's not just anybody, he's God incarnate. And he didn't just do anything. He gave himself as the atoning sacrifice for sin in order that what? We might be redeemed and that we might live redeemed lives, gospel lives, people who were advancing the gospel always and in all ways, that more and more people might know this saving reality, this real life that Jesus came and died to give us. So I think that we have to be more, as the Mindy uses these words, more upside down in the way that we approach the news of the day. And I'm going to encourage you to think about that today. Think about what's happening in the world, and then think about Jesus in the midst of it and how he would turn it upside down. How would he reframe the conversation that's going on around you? How would he ask a question that would lead people to think about their assumptions? How would he tell a story that would help people see the kingdom, big K, kingdom principle at work in the midst of what they're enduring? And so for me, this isn't just about knowing the Bible and bringing the Bible specifically to bear on life. It's about becoming people who think like Jesus thinks, where we actually begin to have the mind of Christ and apply that mind to the issues of our day. Because it's true that the Bible does not talk about every single subject, but the Bible talks about everything. The Bible equips us to think like Jesus, and with the power of the Holy Spirit at work in our minds, literally every thought can be brought into the captivity of Christ, under his control, under his reign, not only as Savior, but as Lord. He can be the Lord of our mind. So I'll give you an example. So I don't know if you've heard this yet. Let me just go ahead and tell you in advance, everybody's going to be okay. But Bret Baier, who sits in the Fox News chair every night, and lots of people across the country listen to him, bring them the news of the day and help them understand it. He and his family were returning yesterday from vacation in Montana, and they were in a very severe car accident, very severe. Jaws of life to get him out of there, kind of severe, according to Stephen Colbert, who was actually the first to break the news on air. Bret Baier says, "Don't take anything for granted." This is on Twitter. "Every day is a blessing. Family is everything. It's always good to remind yourself of that before something does it for you." And then hashtag count your blessings. So there's a wreck, literally, that brought Bret Baier the opportunity to express his faith and to encourage others. And that's a redemptive view of what happened. And so I want to encourage us to be those kinds of news tellers today, as we are the good news people out there in the world. The good news is still good news. And actually, the good news is still news to a lot of people. They have either never heard it or they have forgotten about it. And you and I have to be the people who are out there telling the good news every single day. And we have good news to tell. All right, friends, that's all we've got time for today here on Connecting Faith. I'm your host, Carmen LaBerge. Always a blessing to gather with you. Check out what we're doing at myfaithradio.com on the Connecting Faith page, and you can visit my ministry website, reconnectwithcarmen.com. Have a great day, and God bless. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Connecting Faith. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend to grow the impact of Connecting Faith. Also, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player and never miss a conversation.